commonly you hear from us about Carnival, about events, about classes, about things that we do here at the GAI. But today, I'll take you into the kitchen. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. Welcome back to yet another episode of Here and There, the podcast of the Germanic American Institute. And today it's about the kitchen, the Frankfurt kitchen. And if that puts you in a position where, what are you talking about? Then you're in the same position that I'm in, because I know very little about it, but I do have a guest here in the studio. So this is a special episode welcoming Mary Beth Romslow. Mary Beth, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Frankfurt kitchen. I am at a complete loss. What is it?
Well, so I didn't know about it until a couple years ago as well. I was at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and up on the third floor, they have a Frankfurt kitchen in their permanent collection. And the Frankfurt kitchen was designed in the 1930s in Germany by a female Austrian architect, actually the only female Austrian architect at the time. And she designed this kitchen that was put into a lot of working class homes at the time, where working class women were needing to maintain their at-home responsibilities, but also work outside the home. And so these kitchens were a model of efficiency. She was educated in Bauhaus, and so they were also beautifully designed. But it was a kitchen that was put into a lot of homes to enable women to have more freedom with their time, to be more efficient with their time, as were the demands on them at the time. So Mia, Minneapolis Institute of Arts, has one of these kitchens. It's one of the only two original Frankfurt kitchens in the United States. One is here at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and the other one is at MoMA in New York. And so I became intrigued by this kitchen and wrote a grant proposal about creating a film about women dancing in the Frankfurt kitchen.
Wow. So there's a lot going on. Let's take it from the top. Let's start with the history of it.
Yeah.
You mentioned it started in about 1930, so pre-Second World War. Mm-hmm. And what was the impetus to actually create something? Because my head immediately, knowing that the usual apartment footprint, condo footprint in Germany, Austria, Switzerland is a little bit smaller than what we are known to have here in the US. Is that one of the reasons?
It definitely is. And, you know, post-World War One, there was quite a serious housing shortage in Germany. And so there were all these housing projects to help accommodate this. And the Austrian architect who I mentioned, Margaret Schutte-Lahotsky, was very involved in creating the kitchen that would go into these new developments. And so it needed to be affordable. It needed to be efficient. It needed to be efficient for space too. Mm-hmm. So it's very compact. And she was inspired by actually kitchens on trains. So kitchens on railroad cars that would feed hundreds of people out of this tiny little efficient kitchen on a train.
So sort of from a visual perspective, like the traditional, I suppose, American galley kitchen?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has aspects of that. The one that's at Mia is a galley kitchen. It's long and narrow. You can, if you have a long wingspan, arm span, you can kind of reach from one side to the next and touch the counters or the cabinets. But yeah, a galley kitchen with sort of no wasted space. And that was sort of her approach, because she needed to fit a lot of efficiency into a small space in these new housing developments.
What's commonly in a Frankfurt kitchen?
Sure. That's a great question. Well, they are commonly... they have a low counter, so a much lower counter than you're used to, it's a seated counter. So you can sit on a stool. Oftentimes the stools would have casters and wheels so that you could roll about in the kitchen. But the counter space was all like chair height, not counter height that we're used to. So you would be seated while you would do your work. And then also there's there's definitely a stylistic look to the Frankfurt kitchen that was very uniform. It was, like I mentioned, she was educated in the Bauhaus architecture school of design. So it's very sleek lines. The wooden cabinet handles are very distinctive, as are the color palette. So most of the Frankfurt kitchens are painted in a couple shades of blue that flies have a hard time landing on. I guess there's something with their depth perception and color vision. So if they can't see that they can land on a surface, they won't land there. So by painting these kitchens blue, most of them blue, some of them were green, but in this field of where the flies couldn't land, you wouldn't have flies in your kitchen because they wouldn't have anywhere to be. So they would go somewhere else.
I can see a renaissance of blue kitchens coming up after listening to the podcast.
Right. She also had these very distinctive, if you can look at pictures of the Frankfurt kitchen or go to Mia and see them, she had these bins that were worked into the design of the cabinets that were made out of aluminum, and they had handles on them, and you could put your dry goods in there, like flour, sugar, other things that you might use often in the kitchen. And you would pull this aluminum bin out of a cubby that it fit into, and it had a pouring spout. So you eliminate the need for another dish because you've already got your dry goods in their delivery vehicle into your bowl. So there were a lot of like very distinctive things about the Frankfurt kitchen that especially when you start to look at pictures and look at the history of them, you can see this through line through all of these kitchens that went into lots and lots of apartments in the 1930s in Germany.
Let's talk creature comforts.
Sure.
What is actually, I mean, fridge, I would guess, yes.
No fridge.
Oh, no fridge.
No fridge because I think it was really, there were lots of cupboards where you could put like potatoes and onions for cooler storage, but often your fridge would be, I guess, and the curator at the museum could speak a little better to this, but oftentimes your fridge would be down in the basement, or you might not have a plug-in fridge. You might have more of like a cellar cold space.
Sure.
Creature comforts there. They did have stoves.
That helps.
That helps for cooking. A sink that was usually by the window so that you could look out the window. Sometimes the counter would be by the window so you could look out the window while you were doing your work. There was an ironing board in many of them, so that would fold up against the wall, and then you could bring it down to do your ironing.
So kitchen meets laundry room.
Well, yes, in these smaller apartments, if you've ever lived in an apartment, efficiency is everywhere. You have to sort of tuck things in different places. And so she was sort of a master of that within the Frankfurt kitchen.
Okay, so no fridge, no, obviously I'm guessing, and I might be wrong on this, probably no dishwasher.
No dishwasher. Mm-mm.
Dual sink?
Most of them had actually a large single basin sink. There might have been some that had a dual sink. The one that... I'm trying to remember at Mia, but a larger sink, but yeah, no dishwasher because it was the 1930s.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. In terms of contemporary style, I mean, obviously this kitchen has now been around for 80 some years, almost 90 years in this instance. Is there a sort of an evolution of that kitchen? Because it sounds very much almost like the original minimalism.
Yeah, I mean, I think as I've described this project to people, a lot of people have said like, "Oh, kind of sounds like IKEA," and I think you can see some through lines there of like needing to be efficient yet look good, and functional yet also have quality design. And if you're going to spend a bunch of time in this space, which we often do in kitchens, you want it to feel like a space you want to be in.
From, I would guess, the American perspective, we use kitchens and the adjacent dining rooms as social space, as gathering space. Mm-hmm. A galley kitchen with a stool on coasters that allows you to just maneuver up and down the galley. And then even if the countertops are lower, down to seating height, does it still invite community? Does it still invite social space?
Not really into the actual kitchen. The kitchen's pretty small. And as we got to production of this film, the dancers could really speak to what it was like to dance in such a confined space. But it was really usually designed adjacent, right adjacent to the social space, to the dining room, living room. And actually many of the kitchens had like a pass-through where right from the counter, you could lift up a drawer door and pass the food through to where you would then go right around the corner and serve it and enjoy it with your guests.
So not the contemporary open kitchen space that is almost integrated into the living room.
Yeah, very different than that, actually. I mean, it had a modern look and it was for a modern woman in the sense that women were needing to work outside the home and add to their, you know, their home responsibilities with work responsibilities. But not it wasn't like a gathering space like it is now with many kitchens where you gather around an island and people are cooking and eating and talking. It was still different in that sense. So it doesn't mirror that, but I think it was sort of a bit of a pivot point in kitchen design.
You mentioned earlier the architect came out of the school of Bauhaus. Bauhaus is, as far as the Austrian here on this podcast remembers, actually a chain of home goods stores, similar to just imagine Lowe's or Home Depot. That's the Austrian version would be Bauhaus. Is there another significance to Bauhaus other than that that extends into architecture?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm a filmmaker, so I'm not an architect. So this has been an education for me as well. But I know that she was, you know, she was sort of a visionary because at the time, you know, she was the only female Austrian architect at the time. And so she was schooled in Bauhaus thinking and, you know, Bauhaus design principles. But she was sort of, she had a fresh perspective because she was the only woman designing at that time with those skills. So I don't know, actually, is the answer to your question from an architecture perspective. But from what I've learned from working on this project, you know, what really appealed to me is that she had this unique perspective and this unique intention to like alleviate some of the pressures on women by creating this kitchen that she designed specifically for them.
I'm going to go out way on a limb and I might fall off the tree. So if I do, please stop me in my tracks. But you mentioned that she is the first female architect, particularly also in that space. Would it be fair to say that because a female architect took care of the lines and the development of the Frankfurt kitchen, that it simply became a more appropriate space?
I mean, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think this happens a lot in design where, you know, the default that we are designing for, whatever that is, the phone that's in your pocket, the seatbelts that are in our car, they are actually usually designed with like a male of a certain height and weight in mind as like sort of the norm or the default. And I think having someone that has a different perspective, that is in charge of the design, that has maybe felt some of the constraints and pressures herself, does kind of create this unique position to change the design or think about the design differently.
What's it feel like when you step into a kitchen, into the Frankfurt kitchen?
You know, I think it does kind of feel like stepping a little back in time. Yet at the same time, there's something that's very modern and clean and you know, familiar about it. I mean, obviously you don't have the modern amenities like our refrigerators and our, you know, our fancy stoves with timers and things like that. And, but there is sort of this feeling of, there's not anything extra that doesn't need to be there. And while it is different than like this modern open concept that we have become accustomed to of kitchens now, it feels like a space to work. It feels like a space to get your work done and then go and enjoy, which is kind of just a different perspective. I think it had varying degrees of success. I think some women liked the kitchen and some women felt very confined by the kitchen because it is a very small space. And so I don't think it was like widely the perfect kitchen by any means. And I don't think that women felt that it was. But I think it felt like it was starting to address some of the needs and pressures of their time, which, you know, I wonder sometimes if that's that different these days with all of the hats and the multitasking that women especially are doing if they're working outside the home and caring for children and doing things at home as well. it's messy. There's not a perfect solution to it even now. Right. But I think she was trying to address those things.
So very purpose-built, very functional, very much driven with the intent to produce as opposed to hang out and just gather and sit at the kitchen table for 4 hours included in that kitchen space. So obviously mm-hmm. that's a downright no-go for the Frankfurt kitchen because the space is just not there.
Yeah.
Is this to some degree perhaps seeing a renaissance now? Is this coming back? Is this more of interest? Because obviously you are not 90 years old. So from your perspective, there had to be something attractive about this where you said, this, I like this. I'm drawn to this.
Oh, sure.
Why is that?
Well, you know, I think I'm in my work as a filmmaker. I am definitely very interested in women's stories, telling them, understanding them. There's often, you know, underrepresentation of women's stories in media, especially in film. As a female director, I am someone that, you know, the numbers, if you look at them out of Hollywood, I don't necessarily belong. And so, I am drawn to women's stories, and this to me, when I saw that kitchen and started to think about this idea of dancing in a kitchen, really felt like the story of women and a woman's story. It felt like a story. I keep saying about the project that it's a story about a woman dancing in a kitchen, but really it's a story about the work of women. And what I mean by that is exploring that multidimensionality, exploring the, I often say, like, when you have to multitask a lot on lots of different avenues of your life, it often feels like spinning plates. You know, you're spinning plates on things and which one's going to drop and how do you keep the plates spinning? And so I think I was drawn to this setting to create a story because I am drawn to that multidimensional understanding of the life of women.
Is it a story of confinement or a story of ongoing or forthcoming liberation?
I think it's both. I think that working with these dancers, I worked with 6 different dancers for the film. So we built a replica set of the Frankfurt kitchen because we couldn't dance in this archival kitchen at the museum.
Probably not yet.
For a number of reasons. You know, we worked with the dancers to dance in this set of the kitchen. And I think they felt both. Even as dancers in this story, I think they felt the confines of this small set, you know, that's really only about 10 feet wide by 20 feet long and has counters and things you could run into. They felt the confinement, but I think they also felt an interesting freedom about, you know, needing to express themselves or wanting to express themselves even within the confines. So I think it's a story of both.
Is this capturing or expressing, I suppose, the attitude that you believe needs to be recreated from the 1930s to have this, yes, I am confined in my small space, but there's also the liberation of perhaps not going out and finding work and becoming the woman that I'm meant to be. Is that kind of the path that you're on with this?
You know, I think that it was a really interesting creative process working with these 6 different dancers because they all are actually a very different style, and we followed the same choreography path and choreography movement, but they could all express themselves. One was a break dancer, one's a classically trained ballerina, one has training in African tribal dance. So it was actually trying to say a bit that, you know, a lot of times we're on maybe the same path, but we have our own ways of expression. And so I don't know that it's that we need to go back to something. I think it's just a matter of understanding where we've come from mm-hmm. with women's roles at home and in society and in the workforce and finding your own place with that and finding your own version of that expression. So that's I think, why it was really important to myself and the choreographer, Zoe Henro of Ballet Collaboratory. We wanted to make sure that these dancers didn't all feel exactly the same. We wanted to make sure that they had their own version of expression of this dance that they followed. They followed a similar path, but they could express in their own way.
So the kitchen becomes the canvas.
Oh, definitely. The kitchen is the canvas for this story. It's a It's a conceptual dance film. It's definitely an art piece. There is no speaking. There's music, but it's expression through dance. And the kitchen is for sure the canvas and the backdrop.
Let's talk creative for a second. We've talked straight lines in the kitchen, and now we're talking individual interpretation of what a dancer feels, perhaps, and expresses within this canvas, given their individual style of dance. But how did you come up with this? This is not necessarily, I think, the immediate leap where, say, kitchen dance makes perfect sense. Makes, I think, particularly from a male's perspective, obviously, rather handicapped in that perspective, very little sense. So how did that come together?
Well, so several years ago, I was in a training at Minneapolis Institute of Arts for a project in my kids' school where you come into school and talk with kids about art and get them talking critically about art. And I had some extra time, so I was wandering through the museum and ended up connecting with the designer of another exhibit who I was very interested in. And she kind of directed me to the Frankfurt Kitchen and we started talking about this concept of this idea of dancing in a kitchen and the realities of like how tricky that would be to do in an archival kitchen. And I said, well, I'm a filmmaker. What if we made a film about this concept of the work of women as expressed in a dance in this kitchen or some artistic version of this kitchen? So it was really just a conversation with a designer friend. And it kind of grew from there. I knew I needed funding support to make this idea come to life, so I applied for a Minnesota Arts Board Artist Initiative grant. And then when I got the grant, I was able to fully realize the project. And so it was sort of a seed of an idea, and I think a lot of that happens creatively sometimes where you find something that's fascinating to you. You start saying, well, what if we did this? What if we did this? What if we went down this path? And so it was sort of an evolution that kind of came about because of some conversations and some interest. And then once the Arts Board grant came through, then I was really able to say, okay, so what does it look like to have dancers dance in a kitchen? What are the specifics of this? But I mean, I've always been interested in dance. I danced as a kid. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of documentary work around dancers. So this was an area that was of interest to me. It's so visual. It's so beautiful to follow. But I'd never done a project like this where the dancers danced for the film. So that was really different.
Sure.
That's really different than following documentary style, people dancing or dancers doing what they do. This was very much performing for the camera and performing for the film project. So it was a great growing and learning experience as a filmmaker.
In preparation for this podcast, actually in the wrap-up of last podcast, off air, so to speak, I did talk with Claudia and Catherine, and the consensus was that the Frankfurt Kitchen is still very well alive and mm-hmm. very well built, but in a more contemporary way, in, let's just say, newer buildings in Germany. And even in Austria, I do not recall kitchens having the same spacious appearance as the typical American kitchen with the big island, mm-hmm. with the opportunity to have 4, 6, 8 people around that center island and just hang out there for hours on end. I think we celebrate food, but probably not to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any, in your endeavor to portray the emotion in that canvas, in that kitchen, mm-hmm. did you have any interest, any support, any connection to Germany? And was there any help that was extended perhaps from the Germans?
Well, I did connect with a friend of mine who is connected here at the Germanic American Institute. We've talked a bit about how can we involve the German community with this story, because it's so intrinsically German, having belonged and, you know, originated in Frankfurt. And there is opportunity actually to engage, because as part of the project, the film will live on the website. So you can view it on the website, but you can also submit a recipe connected to an important woman in your life. So there's a submission tool on the website that allows you to submit a recipe and tell a story about a woman that recipe is connected to.
Which website?
So it's called kitchendanceproject.com.
All right.
So on kitchendanceproject.com, you can you can go on and you can think of a recipe from your life connected to a woman that meant something to you, or still does, and you can submit that recipe and a story about that woman. So what's cool is that we could have German recipes on there. We could have French recipes, Irish recipes, American recipes. That's the hope, is that what we end up with is a collection of recipes that tell stories within different cultures and backgrounds, stories and experiences of women throughout, you know, history, recent and past. So, there is a lot of cool opportunity for Germans to share German recipes, German stories, and other cultures too, as well.
You mentioned culture and meaningful individual in one's life. Did you have any, let's just say, surprised or perhaps strange reaction from your American friends explaining the project, there is this kitchen canvas and dancers in this essentially micro kitchen, if you will, something that we don't really know in the US. What was the reception so far on this?
You know, so far, the film hasn't been released yet. It will be soon. It's premiering at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts on March 19th. It's a free event that's open to the public. But I've been able, you know, I've told a lot of people about the project along the way. And I don't know that there's, I think there's curiosity about more like, kind of to what you asked earlier, like, why would you even put these two things together? And so I think really it's forced me to think about that, you know. And I'm excited for them to see the end result, and hopefully they can see sort of the genesis of why this was so appealing to me. Which was that it kind of merges some really interesting things in my head, which is dance, women's stories, design. And it also, it's sort of like a visual poem to all of those things. It's not a narrative film that has a story with people talking and that you follow. It's sort of just an artistic expression piece. So it's hard to say too much yet, but the reaction has always been like, huh, okay, so you're going to build a set. And you're going to have these dancers dance and sort of like, yeah, a little bit like, why? And I think I sometimes think that's just a question with art in general. Like, why do we make these things that we make? And why do we bring to fruition some ideas that don't always necessarily add up for other people or make sense? But when you see them so clearly in your mind, you know, you work to make them come to life. And it's a project that I think, it's important to look at women's stories. I think it's important to look at history and understand, you know, where we've come from in our development as a society, and how we find and understand each other.
I'm just gonna take another leap here and would say that having yet another cooking show, particularly one in a confined space, wouldn't make a lot of sense. So to keep it within the artistic, and since I think cooking is an art form, to keep it in the artistic space, I think dance, the more I hear from you about this project, the more dance actually makes sense as a representative element to, let's just say, women's evolution and becoming, touching back to this confined space into liberation and just dancing into freedom. And I may not make a lot of sense, but this is sort of what comes to mind on this.
Oh, that feels like it makes a lot of sense to me, actually. I think dance is so expressive in a way that, you know, sometimes we experience it, but a lot of times, you know, if you don't seek out dance performance, or if you don't, you know, dance a lot in your own life, it's not something that you tap into as much. And I think it's a really unique way of expression, of bodily expression, of emotional expression. And it felt so right for this topic. And the dancers really brought their own personal experiences into how they were going to express it. Some of them talked about it, so we sort of knew what they were thinking and going through, and some of it was more internal. But this idea of women's evolution, of confinement and liberation and finding your way, you know, really resonated with everyone that came into the space to dance.
Do you have plans to bring the film to Germany?
I would love to. I don't have them yet, but that would be amazing.
Because again, there is sort of this immediate cultural and perhaps geographic contradiction in this, in a sense that in the US we are not used to such confined spaces, or at least the majority is not used to confined spaces to that degree. And I suppose by seeing this, there might be a newfound appreciation of the spaces that we do have. Whereas in Frankfurt or Europe with galley kitchens, which are commonplace, mm-hmm. I think we may very well fall victim to the idea that, well, this is just how it is without actually seeing the beauty within that space. So I think Germany could benefit from seeing this.
Oh, I would love to bring the film to Germany. Yes, please. And I think also helping people just understand the history of these kitchens that they, you know, think are so commonplace or are, you know, they're used to them, understanding that they were really part of a woman trying to make her mark and make a difference in other women's lives. You know, whether or not that was successful is up for debate, but she was very intentional in trying to find efficiencies for women because there were more demands on their time, more demands on their energy, more expected of them inside and outside the home. And I think that's a struggle and a situation that, yes, we've made strides, but we're still there. I mean, I feel it as a working mom with two kids at home and a career. You know, there's a lot of plate spinning and a lot of you know, trying to just hold it all together and wear all the hats. And so while we've come some way since the 30s, I think some of the struggles are still there and still being processed and still being figured out.
This is a loaded question, I suppose. But what is the intent of the film? What are you trying to incite? Mm. You're not just creating this for the fun of it. There is meaning behind this. What is that?
I think it's a hope to. Well, I think first off, I mean, it is more than fun. It's wonderful to create something that is beautiful and engages people. So that's on a very base level to start. Yeah. And I think and hope we've done that. But I think it's really to promote a conversation about the role of women at home, in the workforce, in the world. Promote a conversation about women that have gone before us, that have paved sort of pathways to be who the woman that I am in society today. And how will I show that to my daughter too? And how does that go forth? And what was life like for her? So there is a bigger conversation that I hope it sparks about the work of women and the legacy of women in our lives that have impacted us, have lifted us up, have supported us and allowed for us to, you know, continue to evolve and continue to seek, you know, liberation, as you're saying, and within constraint, because it's still there. I mean, the reality is that women are paid less, and there's still leaps and bounds to go for equity in the workplace. And so I don't think that a film can tackle that by any means, but I think it can spark conversation and interest in understanding issues from an artistic perspective.
Yeah, inevitably, it's there. I don't think there is a one fixes it all. There is just the attempt for incremental improvements, whether that's from a wage perspective, employment perspective, discrimination perspective, and so forth. But I think every single piece of conversation that turns the spotlights onto very present issues that we still experience, I think really is helpful in that sense. Mm-hmm. What is it? And this is usually one of the questions that I ask coming up toward the end, but what is it that I should have asked that I didn't ask?
That's a good question. I think one very practical question is, you know, how can people engage with the film, mm-hmm. watch it, support it, what have you? So an answer to that one is, I think, there is a screening of the film, the premiere of the film on March 19th at Minneapolis Institute of Arts. It would be wonderful to have listeners join us there and see the film.
Yeah, it would be great. And it's free of charge.
It's free. It's part of their Third Thursday's events. It's part of their Women's History Month programming. And so I can get details to you for that so that you have the link for the information there.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
And what's great about that is that you can go to the screening and then you can walk right up and look at the Frankfurt Kitchen. So that is like a really cool experience that listeners, if they're interested, should definitely come. Also, the film will live on the website, where you can watch it there. It's a short film. It's about 6 minutes.
Okay.
So, you can watch the film, and you can also participate in that recipe contribution collection stories, where you will, you can submit a recipe connected to an important woman in your life and tell a short story about that woman.
Question to the recipes. I think there are a lot of people who have favorite recipes, and favorite recipes are usually tied to an individual that is of importance in one's lives. So what happens with the recipes? Do those have the recipes have to be cookable, so to speak, or manageable within the Frankfurt kitchen setup?
Oh, definitely don't have to be manageable in the Frankfurt kitchen setup. They can be recipes from any time or space. I really just am looking for, like what you said, that connection of a food item or something that you do food-wise connected to an impactful woman in your life. And that can be, you know, that can be present day, that can be from years ago. The recipes will live in essentially an online recipe collection on the Kitchen Dance Project website, so kitchendanceproject.com. And you will be able to sort them by, if you wanted to look for a dessert, if you wanted to look for a main dish, if you wanted to look for something that was German or Somali or French, you'll be able to sort these recipes and just go see a recipe and read the story about this woman. So ideally, people will submit recipes that someone else could follow. But I also understand a lot of recipes are sort of like off the cuff, like, oh, well, you throw this in and you throw this in. You can tell the recipe that way. It doesn't have to be like a, you know, a perfect cookbook recipe, because many recipes that get handed down throughout the ages are not that. You know, they're sort of done, you know, remembered by doing. So this is just a way for, there will be a collection of these recipes online that you could source, you could look at, you could make on your own or submit your own and submit a story and let the story of this woman sort of live on in this way.
What's your next project?
I have a couple. I am wrapping up production on a documentary about student free speech with the student journalists at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, that had the terrible shooting 2 years ago. That's a story about the power of young people's voices. And so I'm wrapping up production on that film and hoping to find film festivals for it to play at, as well as distribution.
Didn't David Hogg go on to Harvard?
I think he did. He's not one of the students that I followed. Okay. I was specifically working with the student newspaper team.
Okay.
And that story is also connected to American free speech history for youth with a Supreme Court case called Tinker v. Des Moines from 50 years ago that established student free speech rights in schools. So that's a documentary that I'm hoping finds an audience this year. And I'm also working on some podcast stories. I'm in development for a podcast about stories connected to color.
Can you shed some details or share some details on this? Shed some light?
Yeah, it's very early. And actually, audio storytelling is a newer chapter for me, but I'm very intrigued by it. I definitely love film and the visuals, but I think there's something really intimate about audio storytelling. And so I am interested in doing a podcast series about stories connected to color and the emotional impact of color on in lots of different ways. So it's going to be artist-based, where we start with an artist who has a connection to a color. And then we'll go into historical references to color, as well as personal references to that color. So the idea is that there will be, you know, the turquoise episode, the magenta episode, and stories connected to this specific color throughout history and design and literature and all kinds of ways.
When is the podcast coming out?
Well, this it's in very early development, so you know I don't have a good answer for that yet. But I'm in the gathering stage.
Fair enough. I know what it takes to put those things together. All right. Well, that I think pretty much wraps my questions and the questions that you kindly offered to me that I forgot and should have asked. Again, let's run the website one more time and the date of the film. It is free of charge, where it's at, how to get there, when to get there, and that you just simply should be there.
Thank you. Well, yeah, so the project is called Kitchen Dance, and the website where you can learn more is kitchendanceproject.com. And the premiere screening will be at Minneapolis Institute of Arts on Thursday, March 19th at 6:30 p.m. It's a free event. It's part of their Third Thursday's events at the museum, but it is ticketed. So it's free and ticketed. So you'll need to get a ticket on the website to secure your spot in the theater for the screening. At the screening, we will screen the film. The choreographer and I will talk a bit about in more detail about the process, and you can see some behind the scenes stuff about how we made the film.
And where can people find you personally?
So my name is Mary Beth Romslow. I'm a filmmaker here in the Twin Cities. My website is marybethromslow.com. That's MarybethRomslow.com.
And social, Instagram, Facebook?
I'm on there a bit. I end up, yes and no. I end up being so busy making the work that I do that I don't do a ton of social media. But you can find me on Instagram at marybethromslow.com, or just at marybethromslow, I should say.
Because from all that I gather, the variety of projects, the variety of canvases that you work on with the kitchen project now, then with the colors project coming up, and particularly the speech project with the high school kids that had that incredible tragedy happening to them, I think you are definitely a filmmaker, an artist, an audio maker that my audience here should follow.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, you can definitely, the best spot is really through my website.
Okay.
It's where I post the most recent work. You can connect with me there directly via email. Yes, I'm sort of on Facebook and Instagram as well.
As we all are. Mary Beth, thank you so much for swinging in.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me today.
Well, this is Michael taking you literally to the kitchen. And I'm going to take myself out of the kitchen. With that, I'm signing off. We'll hear you again in March for the next episode. And we do have Fred Amram coming back in March as well for a continuation of our original episode. A lot has happened since, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, hop on over onto all the social media channels and onto the website and follow Mary Beth. And we'll talk soon. Until then, ciao.